Come on, take your seat down for In the Jar. We're back for another week, episode 24. We're going to get into some stuff this week. It's been a slower NFL week, but we're going to talk about Antonio Brown filing for bankruptcy. We're going to talk about Brandon Ayuk and how he might be departing from the San Francisco 49ers in this offseason. We'll get into the most overlooked NFL transactions of the offseason. We'll get into some philosophy, a little bit of this, a little bit of that. And then we'll talk markets. NVIDIA has corrected, so we'll talk all about that. Apple in the news again as the EU's fining them. So we'll address all of these things and some of our valued audience members' most pressing questions about what to do with your money. This is episode 24 of In a Jar. Hope y'all enjoy. Like this video, comment, helps us out a lot. And if we hit you in the chest at any moment, make sure you subscribe. We appreciate y'all. Let's get into it. All right, boys and girls, we're back. Another week of In the Jar, episode 24, with your boy, Dupe, the only show on God's green earth where you can get your sports news and you can get a little bit of applicable finance juice type deal. We'll talk about what's going on in football. I think there's a couple of other headlines we wanted to discuss, and then we'll obviously get into what's happening in markets. Some frequently asked questions by y'all. Not a lot going on in the NFL this week. More gossip-oriented opinion articles. There's a whole slew of articles about how people are disgusted with Bill Belichick dating a lady that's a third of his age. A whole slew of things around Zach Wilson. And apparently he had a photo op with the Broncos, and his hair was all slicked back and people was clowning him. He kind of seems like an easy target for a lot of folks. I don't know what warrants that. Maybe it's just the hair. But on a more serious note, Brandon Ayuk is a guy who's been talked about a lot. San Francisco 49ers receiver Brandon Ayuk is stating that the organization doesn't want him back. Here's a clip of that.
Bro, look in the camera, bro. Flip the camera.
He got me vlogging this.
What? They said they don't want me back. I swear.
Oh my. So there's been a lot swirling around, specifically around this clip, and it's now come out that the San Francisco 49ers reportedly had trade discussions with the Washington Commanders about trading for the newly highly touted receiver. They opted against doing a deal on draft night. The Commanders opted against doing a deal on draft night. And later in the day, JPA Football, which is an account that I've been told by insiders to look out for, relayed the Schefter report in an Instagram post, to which Ayuk himself replied, "But I thought the Niners was never trying to trade me." He just caught 75 passes for 1,300 yards and 7 touchdowns last season. He's entering the final year of his rookie deal. And both general manager John Lynch and head coach Kyle Shanahan admitted during April's draft that the 49ers had discussions with other teams on Ayuk, but nothing ever seemed close. To me, it sounds like Ayuk wants an amount of money from the 49ers that the 49ers don't want to pay him. I think folks are getting misconstrued about the fact that they just don't want his talents out on the field. And the way he's responding to things might have teams viewing him namely the 49ers, a little different. But I think it's just a business thing. I don't think it's personal. And a lot of times, especially in situations like being in the NFL, there seems to sometimes be a line that gets blurred between organizations trying to make a business decision and players feeling unwanted, maybe taking it personally. So I'm sure things have escalated with the way Ayuk's responded, but it just seems like he wants an amount of money that the 49ers aren't yet willing to give him. And it's clear the Commanders could have used him as a piece in their offense and their rebuild as they get Jaden Daniels in there trying to resuscitate the health of that organization. But it's clear Ayuk isn't happy, and he appeared in a TikTok video on June 17 with Commanders rookie quarterback Jaden Daniels saying, "They said they don't want me back." So it's all up to speculation. I wouldn't be surprised if we saw Brandon Ayuk suiting up for the 49ers this season. In fact, I'd say it's probable. So there you have it. A little mic bump, a little bit of this, a little bit of that. Brandon Ayuk told us that he wanted to set this meeting up himself. And when he was sitting with us, I guess this is Ryan Clark from the Pivot podcast. When he was sitting with us, he said that he's taken these negotiations personal. The way that they have negotiated with him, the way that they have told him why he's worth what he's worth, it has touched him. It has affected him. It says he wants to be in San Francisco first, but is comfortable playing elsewhere if that's something that the San Francisco 49ers are willing to do via trade. And I'll tell you this, when he sat with us, he did not walk into the room alone. First, it was Brandon Ayuk. Second, it was Jaden Daniels. I'm not a tea leaf reader, but it seems like Ayuk wouldn't mind playing in Washington. So we'll see what happens. I don't think he's going to go anywhere. Could be a freezing cold take. Could be a scalding hot one. Not much else in the football world going on this week, admittedly. Former NFL star Antonio Brown confirms that he's filed for bankruptcy, quote unquote, "I'm fucked up." Fudged up. Antonio Brown made nearly $81 million during his 12-year NFL career, but he's since filed for bankruptcy to deal with some debt that he's piled up. And he admitted himself, I believe this was on the Pivot also, that he is not good with managing debt, and he doesn't have the income from football anymore to facilitate paying debt off. Now, we have seen Brown in the past trying to own, I can't remember what football league that was in, but he owned some team in an arena football league where he wasn't meeting payroll, he wasn't paying the guys, and he's got a couple of lawsuits pending, sexual, not assault, but sexual misconduct, personal misconduct allegations, and he's struggling to pay him off. So he came on the Pivot, I guess, and said, "I'm paying all of this down, so I got to file bankruptcy." Again, slow news week in the NFL, so, you know, this is what we're working with on the show this week. But Antonio Brown's filed for bankruptcy, and it's clear that he doesn't hold his tongue. He on X, he's one of the biggest personalities out right now because he'll speak on literally anything controversial that he can get his hands around. Very sexually charged content as well. And I'll admit, man, it's freaking funny. But I could see how someone like that, someone in his position, someone with his reputation, would have folks coming after him personally. And then they know what he made in his football career. And it's easy to go after a guy like that. One linebacker, I forget his name, is Greg something, maybe Greg McElroy, I hope I didn't get that wrong, was asked whether Antonio Brown belongs in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. And his answer was a resounding yes. And his justification behind that was, you can't argue with the production. Antonio Brown was an all-pro many times, a pro bowler many times, one-time Super Bowl champ in Tampa Bay with Tom Brady that fateful year a couple seasons ago. And, you know, if you look at the film, when I'm talking about a guy's football career, the thing I always want to do is look at film. I think it's easy to define someone's career by how many championships they've won. That's important. How many All-Pros they've gotten. It's pretty important. Pro Bowls, I don't know. That's voted on by the fans, and the fans are the ones that have their eye on things the most. So, sort of factor Pro Bowls in. But if you look at the film, and you look at how masterful of a route runner Antonio Brown was, if you look at how much of a nose for the ball Antonio Brown had, the way he was able to track, go up, make contested catches, and make really any corner in the league look silly. I think with this stage of AB's life, he's profiting from his personality, but that kind of causes people to forget how tremendous of a football player he was. And he wasn't an overwhelming physical specimen by any means. He wasn't built like Calvin Johnson. He's a shorter guy, stocky for his build, but still sleek and elusive. And the way he ran the football after the catch is a whole nother story. Early in his career, he's returning punts. I think even later in his career, he's returning punts. And so, is Antonio Brown a Hall of Famer to me? Yes, he is. If you look at the film, Antonio Brown deserves to be in the Hall of Fame. Will he ever get the nod? Probably not. But to me, film is the dominating factor in what I judge personally to be a Hall of Famer. So, He fits that. He passes the eye test on film. I'll just say that as one of the greatest receivers ever in terms of pure talent, pure skill. And you could break down great players by a bunch of different things. I kind of mentioned that, but legacy is a big thing, right? And obviously, some of Antonio Brown's behavior has tainted his legacy. Then you look at just pure skill. What are your technical abilities at whatever position you're playing? If you're a receiver, how's your route running? How's your feet? If you're a quarterback, how's your decision making? How's your footwork? If you're a tackle, how physical are you? How's your footwork? I could go down the list on different skills that stand out at each position, but nonetheless, I think film never lies. It's easy to get caught up in controversies. It's easy to get caught up in whatever is swirling around these players. It's very evident that folks are highly scrutinized due to their playing prowess, being in the world's largest sport league in the NFL. So, I think AB's a Hall of Famer. I don't know. What do y'all think? Leave what you think about that in the comments. The most overlooked additions of the 2024 NFL offseason. This was an article published by Bleacher Report recently, and a couple of names just stood out to me. Paris Campbell headed over to the Philadelphia Eagles. Willie Gay headed over to the New Orleans Saints. These are a couple of impact players that I don't think get enough credit. Paris Campbell is a guy who's been plagued by injury throughout the course of his career. I remember when the Indianapolis Colts drafted him, I was working there, and the praise for the pure athleticism that this guy has is I was always just mind-boggled when it didn't translate to the field, and obviously injuries were a factor in that. But came out of Ohio State, and I mean, in terms of pure ability, it's really hard to comprehend when a guy's career doesn't pan out the way you think it does. And again, he might be one of those guys that is just too athletic for his own good. We mentioned that about Nick Chubb last week. And Willie Gay, I mean, I'll tell you what, brother. Willie Gay was the glue of that Kansas City Chiefs defense. That guy could do everything. We've talked about him on the show numerous times. He could play Mike. He can play on the edge. He could play Will, Sam linebacker. The guy's all over the field making plays. He's long. He's able to get off blocks, but he's able to also cover slot receivers and lock them down underneath. And so he's going to bring some good juice to that Saints defense, along with Cam Jordan and a few other guys they added that I can't remember at this very particular moment. So what else do we got? We'll move on from the football stuff, because like I said, y'all, it's a slow week in the NFL in terms of news headlines. Let's go into the email inbox and see what we get. Farnham Street, brain food. We ain't done brain food for a couple weeks. I felt it was time to bring it back. Perfection is impossible. In the 1,526 singles matches I played in my career, I won almost 80% of those matches. Now I have a question for you. What percentage of points do you think I won in those matches? Only 54. In other words, even top-ranked tennis players with barely more than half of the points they play, when you lose every second point on average, you learn not to dwell on every shot. You teach yourself to think, okay, I double-faulted. It's only a point. Okay, I came to the net, then I got passed again. It's only a point. Even a great shot, an overhead backhand smash that ends up on ESPN's top 10 playlist. That, too, is just a point. And here's why I'm telling you this. When you're playing a point, it has to be the most important thing in the world, and it is. But when it's behind you, it's behind you. The mindset is really crucial because it frees you to fully commit to the next point and the next point after that with intensity, clarity, and focus. You want to become a master at overcoming hard moments. That is, to me, the sign of a champion. The best in the world are not the best because they win every point. It's because they lose again and again and have learned how to deal with it. You accept it. Cry it out if you need to, and force a smile. That's from Roger Federer. And what came to mind while I was reading that was my damn golf game, brother. Golf's probably 95% mental, and that's why I think I'm liking it so much, in addition to the fact that the desert heat is driving tee time prices way down, and your boy's able to play for cheap. But in golf, it's crazy because I walk up to the tee, I'll hit one, slice it bad, somehow it stays in play, and you're thinking, you're getting in the cart, driving to your ball, and you're thinking, golly, man, another one, another bad shot. This is going to turn into another bad hole. And that statement right there is when I'm starting to learn how to cut that off. And be like, you know, like it's one shot. This is a par four. We got three left to get on up there. Or two left to get on up there, or one putt it, or even get a bogey. Bogey golf ain't too bad, in my opinion, for an amateur. But nonetheless, it's just like, okay, this is really important. This shot deserves all my clarity and focus. But if it's a bad shot, it's not the end of the world, and I got to put it past me. Because not every shot's going to be a good shot. But with high-performing folks in their craft like Roger Federer, the ability to move past a bad event, which is inevitable, you know, it's like the saying, lost the battle but you won the war. The ability to move on. I remember in my playing days playing football thinking about Ray Lewis always come into the huddle. Clips of him, I'd see Ray Lewis would come to the huddle and say, it's about the next play. It's just about the next play. And if you're thinking about how bad the last play was, you probably ain't going to be fully focused and fully clear for the next one, and so on. It's a lot like life if you think about it. Not getting hung up on things, not ruminating on things too much. Learning from your mistakes, reflecting on them, but sometimes that's hard. Sometimes reflecting on your mistakes can turn into rumination without you even know it. And that's the mind within the mind, right? When you sit down to meditate, you realize that even as an experienced meditator, your mind starts to get a mind of its own. And it takes a lot of skill. It takes a lot of practice to dig deep down and pick up on when that mind of its own starts carrying things out of proportion, starts creating its own story, its own narrative. And just the awareness to pick up on that and give it some attention momentarily makes it completely go away a lot of the time. We're human. We're not going to be perfect at picking up on those things all the time. But as I come into my adulthood, as I kind of get settled into my career personally and doing this and everything else, it's about awareness. Plain and simple. People are always trying to add more stuff to life. Reduce it to simpler, pure moments. That's from Jerry Seinfeld. Kind of an essentialist approach, right? It's not thinking about what I want a lot of the time. A big part of the battle is thinking about, hey, what don't I want? And it's just like taking a damn multiple choice test, right? If you got four options on a multiple choice test, four answer options, and you determined three of them are absolutely not right, then you got your answer. And you didn't even have to think about what's the right answer. We must always remember that possessions have no inherent value. They become what we make them. If they increase our capacity to give, they become something good. If they increase our focus on ourselves and become standards by which we measure other people, they become something bad. Possessions are a weird thing, man. I was listening to a book today asking if you had to sell your favorite human relationship in the world, what would you sell it for? The author of the book, Ray Dalio, said, there's not, like, every penny in the world couldn't get me to sell my relationship with my spouse. And it kind of makes you think, okay, yeah, I'm going to be happy when I get that Lambo. I'm going to be happy when I get that lake house. I'm going to be happy when I can fish all day, every day. The last one might be a valid goal. But I'm just kind of sitting here thinking, like, our world is so wrapped up in possessions, consumerism. Everywhere you look, there's advertisements. Everywhere you look, there's people trying to say, hey, buy this, buy that. And it's almost like the social pressure of appearing as a high status human is what drives a lot of our financial spending behaviors. So it's something to think about. Possessions can be great, and it's okay to want things, I feel. But again, the possessions become what we make them. If they increase our capacity to give, they become something good. Something to think about. Life is simple but not easy. The problem is we want life to be easy, which makes it complicated. A lot of mistakes come from copying people playing a different game than you. Writing is often the process by which you realize you do not understand what you are talking about. I love my writing practice, man. I think a big deterrent for waking up and writing every morning for people is that their hand starts to hurt, and it's a valid excuse. And I feel that pain in my hand every time I get up and write my 3 pages. But it's like, dude, the mental clarity you get from it is, it's insane. And sometimes it don't really help, but it don't make things worse. I'll tell you that much. Let's get into some market talk. How about it? Okay, NVIDIA is sparking broader market chatter after extending its recent losing streak to enter correction territory on Monday. The high-flying stock lost $500 billion in market cap over the past several sessions, retreating to third place behind Apple and Microsoft in the rankings of the most valuable companies on the planet. It's still up 140% year-to-date, making it the second-best performer in the S&P 500 behind Supermicro Computer, which is nearly triple in 2024. This is just things playing their course. NVIDIA has been hot because of the AI boom. And just like every other company, they are mortal. Things are bound to correct. Will they have great growth long term? I have no doubt about it. But a lot of market activity comes from people trading. It comes from people trying to find the next best thing. And unfortunately, a lot of times in markets, people mistake future growth for past growth. I'm not saying NVIDIA is going to go crazy. I'm not saying it's going to go down either. But it's just something to look out for. Normally in markets, if something is hot, if people are talking about something, even if you read one headline about this stock that is starting to do well, it's probably getting to be too late. And that's the beauty of the market. Okay, here's an interesting one. AI music. Seeking damages of up to $150,000 per work infringed, the biggest record labels in the business are suing AI music generators Suno and Udio for alleged mass infringement of copyrighted sound recordings. There have already been many mounting concerns over using AI in content creation, though partnerships are increasingly being forged. The music industry is collaborating with responsible developers to build AI tools and put artists in charge, noted Mitch Glazier, CEO, Recording Industry Association of America. Copying an artist's life's work and exploiting it without consent or pay set back the promise of genuinely innovative AI for us all. You're seeing it, folks, real time. The growing pains of disruption. AI is going to be a great tool for all of us. Hopefully it doesn't kill us. And I've listened to some daunting books about how that possibly could come to fruition. But in the music space particularly, it is crazy how AI is probably nowhere close to what we're going to see it at its highest potential. And that may take a couple hundred years. And we're already getting robots to crank out musical content. So much so that the music labels are now getting their nose in legal action. It's a crazy world, folks. Boeing was on the hot seat this week. I was seeing TikToks all over the place about their chairman, who I believe is stepping down, going to testify on Capitol Hill, getting absolutely grilled about how much his compensation has grown in his time at Boeing and how most employees of Boeing only get a 1% pay raise per year. So they're in a tough spot. It's tough to tell. Could be a good value play down the road if they get their stuff together. But nonetheless, Boeing's another topic of discussion here. Amazon working on a chat GPT rival. Amazon's got their damn nose in everything, man. It's hard to describe a online book selling company, which is what Amazon did when they started, turning into what they've turned into. Amazon does analytics for the NFL. Amazon does cloud data storage. Amazon's gotten involved. I saw a damn ad. Amazon's getting involved in medicine now. You can find doctors through Amazon. And now Amazon's working on a chat GPT rival. And it sounds like Bezos is personally involved in it. Why wouldn't he be? Apple declined integrating Meta's AI chatbot. So we talked about this on the show recently, but Apple has entered into an agreement with ChatGPT, OpenAI's ChatGPT to integrate into all Apple devices. Apple's staring at a possible $38 billion EU fine as regulators ramp up the pressure. Basically, what I understand with this case is that the European Union is slapping Apple on the wrist and saying that Apple hasn't given app developers a full scope of options within Apple's App Store, namely with Apple's ability or Apple's prohibition of folks to be able to make purchases with whatever app developer outside of the App Store. Regulators are taking a bite out of Apple this year. In March, the EU fined it nearly $2 billion over the cut of subscription fees up to 30%. It was taken from music apps like Spotify, which regulators deemed stifling. The US DOJ also sued Apple that month, accusing it of illegally maintaining an iPhone monopoly. So, despite all of this, Apple stock's done incredibly well this year. And we read it earlier, but they have passed NVIDIA in terms of market cap in the prior days, now that NVIDIA stock's corrected a little bit. But I'll tell you what, man. I'll tell you what. These companies aren't going away. That's the fact of the matter. They will fluctuate. And like I said on last week's show, takes discipline, it takes consistency, and a lot of times it takes restraint to be successful in the stock market, especially if you're an investor that's checking your portfolio every day and seeing it go down at times, especially with companies like this that are going to be moving a lot. These companies aren't going away, and I think that's something to remember. A lot of them won't go away. There are many things that occur in markets that are unforeseen. And a lot of times we don't know what we don't know. So I don't think any of these companies are going away, Apple, Microsoft, NVIDIA. But there's always disruption. So one commonly asked question, what Robinhood stocks pay dividends? I think that's funny because, you know, you got the younger folks probably typing in that search into the Google machine, what Robinhood stocks pay dividends. The stocks pay dividends regardless of what brokerage they're on. Robinhood's a brokerage. Morgan Stanley's a brokerage. Charles Schwab's a brokerage. Vanguard's brokerage. You could go down the list. Fidelity. So it's not necessarily what Robinhood stocks pay dividends. I get the essence behind that question because a lot of young folks that are going into the Google machine for investment advice are on Robinhood. So they want to know what stocks pay dividends on Robinhood. The answer to that is any company that is mature. Mature meaning they're established enough in the business world to have excess earnings to pay out to investors as a thank you for holding their stock. A lot of times these companies are less growth oriented, right? So you think of utility companies, you think of oil companies, you think of companies like AT&T that pay dividends. So the dividends aren't going to be huge, right? It's normally anywhere from 3 to 5% that companies pay to a shareholder. And that's 3 to 5% of the share that you hold. And so you can imagine as you rack up your portfolio, I've seen, I mean, countless times, clients of mine, clients of our firm, that their portfolio is so large and they hold so many dividend stocks that they're able to actually live off the dividends that they're paid. But it's a slow burn. And even with my account, the dividends I get from dividend stocks, it ain't paying the rent yet. But it is a great strategy, especially if you reinvest, for young people, the dividends into more of that stock, because that starts to compound and really build some positive momentum. Again, if you're disciplined, committed, focused, and intentional about approaching how you're investing, what your goals are. And again, with a dividend paying stock, you're going to have to sacrifice a little bit of growth, right? Because if a company's paying dividends, that money's going to you instead of going back into the company to grow more. That's why companies like NVIDIA, Tesla won't pay a dividend. Everything's going into the business to grow the business, as opposed to, okay, we're going to send all of this excess money over to the shareholders as a thank you. No, the thank you with a growth company is the hope that it will keep going higher and higher and you could sell it at a capital gain. So which Robinhood stocks pay dividends? Look out for companies like AT&T. Look out for, and it'll tell you right in the description of the stock what percentage dividend the company pays. And remember, whatever percentage of shares that you own, right, in your portfolio, how much, let's say a stock's going for $50. If it pays a 10% dividend, you're going to get 5. So that's the yield, right? That's the juice. So if you want to know what Robinhood stocks pay dividends, go into Robinhood, look up any company that you know, scroll down in the description, and it'll say if there's a dividend yield. If there's not, it'll just have a line, like a hyphen. So that's the question of the day. And with that, again, it's been a slow week, y'all. I've been out in the field grinding. That's why I'm all prim and proper. That's episode 24, folks. In the Jar with your boy, Dupe. Appreciate y'all tuning in. Like, comment, subscribe if we hit you in the chest. Please, it helps the show. We greatly appreciate you watching this far. Hope you have a good week, and we'll see you.